The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
It's now my pleasure to welcome back the beloved, redoubtable, and legendary Nikki Giovanni and the recently crowned Philadelphia Poet Laureate, Tripita Mason, who will introduce our guest and moderate the event. Tripita and Nikki, the screen is all yours.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Thank you very much. It is an honor to introduce poet, author, Nikki Giovanni, or as she said, for me to call her Nikki also. Please be okay with that. Poet and author Nikki Giovanni, and to be present tonight as she reads from her latest collection of poems and prose entitled Make Me Rain. Earlier today, Nikki spoke again with teens as part of the library's Field Family Teen Author Series. And I can only imagine how incredible those young people must have felt to be so close to her and her words. Much like myself as a young person once upon a time, when I met her through her poems like Nikki Rosa, Black Love is Black Wealth, and through classics like Ego Tripping, I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal, I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky. Imagine what these words did and still do for young girls, young Black girls, the power they hold, the permission they grant to write, to produce, to make, to tell and tell the stories of people, everyday people. From her first collection, Black Feeling, Black Thought, to her current work, Make Me Rain, and the vast collection of poetry, children's books, albums, essays, prose, and special projects in between. She has gifted us by giving us back our experiences through the beauty of ink, ink that make meaning through poems. And on a day like this one in Philadelphia that is fraught with unrest, I am reminded of how Nikki impressed and inspired me to make meaning out of art, to let it be productive, to let it speak and challenge. And in her work, we heard about revolution and action. We learned about the Black arts movement, civil rights, and Black power. But we also hear about family and ancestors and rest and respite and the need to reflect on peace and how we treat this world we're in. As an educator, she has poured into the discipline of writing and reading into young minds. She is committed to this art form that holds so much possibility and promise. And then from her essay, We Write, in her new collection, I have a quote, "We write because we have evolved to another century. We write to be sure the words of to the song, and for those who understand, the notes to the music get written down. We write because we are lonely and scared, and we need to keep our hearts open." Welcome, Nikki Giovanni.
Oh, thank you so much. I have to apologize for anybody that was with me this afternoon. I have a crazy dog, and there were people coming in and out the house, and Cleopatra just kept barking and barking and barking. I thought Andy was teasing me, but I thought I'm gonna put that dog in the oven and bake her, and that's what I'm gonna have for dinner tonight. But as you can see, she's actually she had some marijuana. There's a dog hemp. I don't know if humans can't take it, but there's a dog hemp, and it really just relaxes them. So you're not hearing her anymore. And anybody that was with us, any of the teenagers that were with us this afternoon, anything, I apologize for Cleopatra not quite being, well, she was herself, but it was a little bit more than we could handle. I'm very, very glad to be with Philadelphia again. Lorraine Carey is an old and dear friend, and her book, Lady Sitting, her book with her, sitting with her grandmother, is so wonderful because I'm grandmother prone. And reading that, I was so proud, not only of Lorraine, but of the idea And I guess grandmother is an ancestor, but it's more than an ancestor. Grandmothers are friends. And I have a son, and I think sons are nice people. You know, if you need your gutter cleaned out, your son comes to help you. If the plumbing doesn't work, you call your son and he knows how to fix it. But if you need somebody to talk to, if you need somebody to laugh with or to cry with or to just be with you, there's nothing like a granddaughter. And that means there's nothing like a granddaughter. So I'm going to recommend daughters. I know that people, everybody's like, oh no, you know, but I think daughters are incredibly wonderful. And that's not to say any of the gentlemen in the room, we welcome you and we love you, but there's just something really special about daughters. So I just want to give a shout out to daughters because they're great. I enjoyed writing my last two books. Which you've talked about. This one is the last book is Make Me Rain. And the book before that was A Good Cry. And I realized as I was thinking, you're a writer yourself, so you know, but I was thinking, what theme are you coming to? And I realized I was coming to water, or it could be tears. So one of the youngsters asked me today, what made me cry? And I could have taken like an hour to explain that when I was growing up, I didn't cry. And all of the things that I saw around me, some of them were pretty horrible. I didn't cry, I kept holding it in. And when I was, about 5 years ago now, I had a seizure. And my doctor, who was a really nice guy, thank God he's good looking, I wouldn't be bothered with him. But my doctor said, well, your problem is, you know, you have too much salt, you don't take care of yourself, you don't exercise. And I said, Gregory, that's not true. My problem is that I never learned to cry. So I have held things in. So that book was entitled A Good Cry. Gregory disagreed with me and we have argued about it ever since. I told him, actually, I have given you a gift because I have given you a function, a procedure. Somebody could come to you and you could say, oh, I know what's the matter. You have the NICU. And then you can charge them thousands of dollars like doctors do. And what I needed to do was to learn to cry. And a good cry is just doing that. My parents had a troubled marriage and I was holding all of that in. And if it hadn't been for my grandmother, I don't know what would have happened. But learning to let that out, learning to let those tears flow, I ended up with Make Me Rain. Now, Make Me Rain, of course, is a shout out. As you've seen the book, it's a shout out to Marvin Gaye, because you can see right there, Marvin Gaye and what's going on, but he's looking down and the rain is coming down. So Marvin is not sure. I didn't have the pleasure of knowing Mr. Gaye, nor his father. I spent some time, of course, in Detroit because we all, Black Arts Festival just happened in Detroit, but I didn't know Marvin. But I knew that when I was doing this book, I thought, well, I want to give a shout out to Marvin Gaye because I saw that Rolling Stone finally admitted that the best album of our century, because they had been saying one thing or another, they finally said the top album is, of course, What's Going On. And of course, What's Going On should be an opera. It should be when Hollywood, when Broadway opens back up, What's Going On should be on stage because What's Going On was about war. It happens to be about the Vietnam War, but it could be about any number of wars. And so I wanted to give a shout out to the men who have had to fight those wars and to the things that they've had to go through. So this album, this cover is just like that. And the quote on the front was Gwendolyn Brooks. And I always liked Gwendolyn. We were friends. And Miss Brooks was one of the few poets, though, who couldn't cook. Most of the poets, that's the truth. Most of the poets could cook. And Miss Brooks, not only could she not cook, so it was always a problem when she said, oh, come by the house and we'll have dinner. And you'd go like, oh no, not Gwen's house to have dinner. But then she would wash dishes, but she didn't like to dry them. So she would wash the dishes and you'd be standing in the kitchen talking to her and she'd be putting wet dishes up. And you'd say, Miss Brooks, you know, you didn't dry the dishes. She said, oh, they'll be dry in the morning. She never, That's the truth. You can ask any of the Chicago, she's in Chicago, ask any of the Chicagoans about that. That is the truth. But Miss Brooks was an extraordinary, as you know, poet. And of course, we live in America, so nobody wanted to give her credit. She was our first Pulitzer Prize winner, as she should have been. But after a while, you know, you do get just a smidgen tired of hearing about the first as if it was meaningful. What we need to say is this was the first white person who was nice. You know, this is what the first Black person did. We need to talk about what some of the first white people did. I enjoyed Make Me Rain for a lot of reasons. And I dedicated the book to my grandparents. And that's a long story that I won't, maybe I'll carry Luke. My grandfather was a Fisk University graduate, and he graduated in 1905. His mother was the first child born free woman, a free child of slave parents. So there's a background that absolutely goes. But the grandpapa, who was named John Brown, so you can see that there's some, we had attitude. So John Brown Watson, and they called him Book. And he was the one who liked to read. He was the one that was just interested in the arts. So grandpapa was sent to school. They said, no, send him to college because obviously he's not going to be able to run. We ran businesses from Albany, Georgia. We ran businesses, send him to college because he's obviously not going to be able to do anything. So he went to Fisk University. He graduated in 1905 and he married a Spelman woman, which was fine. He took her back home to Albany, Georgia. But then an important thing happened. He met grandmother. And meeting grandmother is going to be a whole different. Grandmother's a pretty woman. I don't know that that's why he fell in love, but he fell in love with her. And so he finally said to his father and his brothers, because the Watson family is a very close family, I'm going to get a divorce because I have to marry Luvinia. He used to say to me when I lived with him, and he would sit there, I would wash dishes, and he would sit, I'm in the kitchen and the way the house is, and the dining room was right here. So he would sit with me while I washed the dishes. And every now and then he'd say, you know, Nikki, I only wanted to kiss your grandmother. And I don't care where grandmother was in the house. She could have been actually across the street or something. She would always hear that. And she would say, John Brown, if I had let you kiss me, you would have never married me. And it took me the longest before I understood, oh, that's a metaphor. He didn't want to kiss her. There was something else he wanted to do with her. And nonetheless, he had to divorce his wife because she wasn't going to let him kiss her. And he married grandmother. Grandmother grew beautiful, beautiful flowers. And so now they're in Albany. They have their own home, of course. And a white woman comes by one day and sees grandmother's flowers and says, What do you want? What do you want me to give you for those flowers? And grandmother, who had attitude all of her life, said, I'm not growing any flowers to sell. I'm give you nothing. So you can see where this is going. When grandpapa, who taught school, came home from work, she said, you know, that white woman down there, they knew each other. Albany's a small city, so they knew each other. You know, she wanted to buy some flowers, and I told her, I'm not selling any flowers. So grandpapa immediately knew that there's a problem. He called his brothers, and they all gathered at my great-grandfather's house. And they said, okay, my youngest uncle at that point would have been his Uncle Joe. And so they told Uncle Joe, take this rifle, which Uncle Joe, all of them were gun people, take the rifle and take the women, all of the women down. We had a grocery store. Take the women to the grocery store, lock the doors. If that door opens, shoot. So Uncle Joe said, okay, he's got his job. And the rest of the Watsons are at grandpapa's house because that's where they're coming. And they all are in a window. And so when the white man came, because they always come at night, have you noticed that? The Klan, the whatever, they always come at night. And so they came and Uncle and my great grandfather went up and said, you know, Luvinia's not well. That's my grandma. Luvinia's not well, and she didn't mean to hurt your wife's feelings. I'm sure that something is wrong. We're gonna take her to a doctor, it's gonna be okay. And the white guy says, well, I tell you what'll make it all right. I'll give her five straps. I'll give her five straps and it'll be all right. It'll be okay. And grandpapa, first of all, grandmother was beautiful And so he's not going to have her abused. And secondly, it's just not going to happen. So he said, well, I don't think we should do that because Luvinia's not well. They're trying to make it all right. And the white guy looks up because, you know, you're sitting on a horse, and he looks up and there are guns pointing at him. So he knows the white guys will probably win, but the first white man is going to be dead is him. So he says, well, she's sick, so we understand. It'll be all right. And so they went on. And then they had a meeting the next day at the family house. And they said, John Brown, she's caused a divorce. Now somebody's going to get lynched because of her. You all have to go. And they're also, the Watsons are political. So they heard about a job in Knoxville, Tennessee. And they said, go to Knoxville. We'll buy you a house, which is what they did. They got their money together. They bought 400 Mulvaney Street, and grandmother and grandpapa moved. Well, this is a long way of saying I learned a lot about love, because watching them and watching how, after all of these years, I was grown. My mother was married to my father. My youngest aunt was married to her husband. So to watch them still playing with each other, to still tease each other, that it still mattered to them. The other thing that she liked, and he loved to do that too, he would not let her go. He had finally learned, he would not let her go to the market. In Knoxville, the market was on the main street was Gay Street. And he would not let her go to the market. So he always went to the market because he knew if she went to the market, somebody would say something. He would have to go and defend her. Somebody would then come, and, you know, you could see this was going to be ugly. So he did all of the shopping. But grandmother loved pineapple. Now why? I couldn't tell you. I can tell you that I hated it. And so on Saturday morning, Grandpapa made excellent ice cream. I made good ice cream too. On Saturday morning, he would get up and go to the market, and he would come home. And on the days that they had pineapple, because they didn't always, you know, it's not always in season. We lived on a hill. It was up that way. And before he could walk up the steps, Luvinia, they had pineapple. And you could hear it in his voice. He was incredibly pleased. And she would say, oh, and you know, and you learn something about love. Of course, I was going like, oh no, my ice cream is ruined, because I know what's going to happen. He's going to make pineapple ice cream for her. And I knew that I was going to eat it because that's the way that one that goes. But he was so pleased. Luvinia, they had pineapple. And you learn a lot about love from watching those people, because I couldn't learn anything by watching my parents, because they were always upset about one thing or another. I wrote a poem that's a long way around to this poem that I really like, and it's called In Silence. I wondered why grandmother and grandpapa could sit in silence on the front porch. She smoked a cigarette, he didn't, sitting on the swing in silence. I washed the dishes and cleaned up the kitchen, trying to figure out why they sat in silence. Then I got to be my own age, with my own deck and my own person, and I understood. And I really love that poem so much, just because you learn so much about love from watching how people treat each other. And I think it's so important that I think young people don't really know about that they don't have an opportunity to have those relationships, because everybody's always running around. Of course, now with the COVID, everybody has to stay home. So people are getting to know each other differently. But it's really, really, really good it's not good that we have a disease that's killing 220,000 people or so, and none of whom are Donald Trump or Pence, unfortunately. But it is still interesting that you have to find your way in to listen to now what the people are going to get their mothers. One of my best friends, who just finally learned to drive. She and her husband went up to, her mother lived in New York. And so they drove up to New York because they knew they couldn't leave her in New York. It couldn't happen. And they drove up to New York and they brought her down. They fixed their house so that she could be comfortable there. And I sent them some flowers. And she was saying, you know, mother was so proud that she sent flowers. I said, well, you know, you're so lucky, because my mother's been gone now for 14 years. I said, you're just so lucky to have him. So I think you're just lucky to have your mom. And we don't realize how lucky we are to have people until they're gone. And then we sit around and say, oh, you know, I miss them. I wrote a poem called Winter Poem, and it's becoming winter now. It's not quite as cold as it's going to be. I have a fish pond, and my fish are fat. My goldfish are getting fat. And we know that that's because they're getting ready for winter, because they're going to go down under the rocks, and they'll go to sleep, and they'll be there most of the winter. And I like birds. I really do. But the birds will eat my fish if I don't find a way to keep them out. So we have, and I have a friend who helps me, but we have a net now. So the birds have been bitching to me. The birds have been upset with me about the fact that they can't get to my fish, because sometimes they can see them swimming around, but they can't get through the net. And I think it's only fair that the birds have to eat something else. I put some popcorn out for them today. I saw they didn't seem to like it. So the rabbits or the skunks or something, I have a meadow, and somebody will eat it. I won't, so somebody will. And this is called Winter Homes, because we all have to be ready for winter. My goldfish are finding winter homes under slabs in the pond. Mother goldfish birthed and hid 4 babies this summer. They were not eaten by birds or their fathers. The heater is on. It's my contribution to Mother Nature. I have aired my quilts and washed my blankets. I will cuddle with my dog, a good book, and with any luck, a cup of frontier soup, finding my winter home. And you may not know because you're young, but frontier soup was leftover. That's all it was, leftover soup. And I learned that from grandmother. Grandmother never threw anything away. There just was nothing that she would throw away. So when we would eat, she always, you know, had a jar that she would put the potatoes that were left or whatever it was left over. And at the end of the month, we would eat it, and we called it frontier soup. When my father had a stroke and actually was dying, mommy called me and said, you know, your father has had a stroke. You know, he's in the hospital, but it doesn't look good. And knowing that I didn't like him, I knew that she didn't call for me. She called because obviously she needed her daughter. So I packed up my son and my dog, and I had a little Volkswagen and went home. And so I went home to stay, and I did the things that I learned from grandmother. And so we started to do frontier soup. And poor Tom, my son's name is Thomas. And at the end of the month, about this time of the month, if you were at our home, you could see Thomas would come in every day and go, you know, he's like looking. And then finally, it would be, as it will be now, Halloween, it'd be like, and he would say, oh no, not frontier soup, because he hated it, because you kept throwing things in and throwing things in. But I think you put enough garlic in anything, it'll taste all right. So put garlic in a couple of, you know, bay leaves, you know what I mean? And you let it cook all day, it's going to work. But it used to just drive him crazy. Oh no, not frontier soup. But I'll bet you, and I haven't asked Tracy, I haven't asked it's his person. I think they're going to get married. I don't know what marriage means anymore, but I bet you he saves the same way, because he cooks like I did. You know, it's really funny. He's 51, so he cooks now. And it's really funny how you end up doing things that you complained about, and then all of a sudden it's fun. He mentioned, and I want to do this because I, like any sane, kind human beings, hate the way that the immigrants are being treated. First of all, I mentioned frontier soup, but I mention a lot in many of my books, especially the last several. I talk about quilts and I talk about stews, because America is a quilt and a stew. America is made up of a lot of different people who came for different reasons. We who are Black were brought here. This was not something like, oh, I'm going to get on American Airlines and go to America. No, we were stolen in Africa, sold to Europeans, and brought here to the country that's going to be America, and sold yet again. Our families were split. We who were women, we were in many cases forced to have children. And after having had that child, the child was taken from us and sent to another community where it would be taught to work and would not have its mother to love it or to take care of it. The milk in my body, in the body of the slaves, would go to the master's wife so that she did not have to have her body, I guess in his mind, ruined by, but nonetheless, if you are what you eat, and we are, there's no such thing as white, because we all have mixed with each other. And it's time that people got over that. I wrote a poem called Raise Your Hand, because everybody's like, oh, and again, I so sincerely dislike Donald Trump. And he's saying the immigrants are gonna come and they're gonna take your job. Well, there's not a job that the immigrants have that anybody wants. I used to fly a lot. I haven't flown now because of COVID, but I used to fly a lot. And I was going through North Carolina, going through Charlotte because it's an international airport. And the people cleaning the toilets, now I've never been in a men's toilet, so I don't know what happens there, but the people cleaning the women's toilets were all immigrants. They got up in the morning before dawn and came out to the airport so that they could wipe toilets and the toilet bowl and the bowl that we wipe our hands in. And people didn't even want to drop a dollar in them. Some people complained about that until the airport made those women take that dollar away. So I never, and I still don't, I never go into an airport without taking at least a dollar and putting it in my hands for the women who wipe that bowl, because they have a lot to take care of. They're not having fun. They are trying to have a better life for their children. So there's a word here. I'm gonna leave the word out, but it's called raise your hand in favor of immigrants. How many of you sitting here think of some woman of color, black, brown, yellow, white, woke up this morning thinking, golly, I can go to the airport and clean toilets. Raise your right hand. How many of you sitting here woke up this morning thinking, how lucky can they be? Oh, Lordy, I wish I could do that. Raise your left hand. How many of us sitting here gave $1 to those women knowing they are underpaid and not appreciated at all? Raise either hand. Did you know if we all gave $1 every time we urinated, those women might take $100 home to feed their mother, their children, their uncle who moved in with them, their husband who will beat them? Raise any hand. How many of you, when you see those women, say, thank God, it's not me? Raise both your hands and clap. You know, it just makes you so angry, because we know that those women, and it is the women, we know that all they're trying to do is get till tomorrow. And we act like, you know, it must be, oh, what a joy it must be to wipe the bowl out after I've washed my hands. And that's the kind of thing, sometimes people say, well, why are you black people always upset with white people? Because y'all are crazy. I know no other, and I have very good friends who are white, but that's crazy. How can you not see the need there? And how can you not just ask yourself, what little bit can I do to help? And there's an old, it's a British song. It's an old folk song, you know. If you haven't got a penny, a half penny will do. If you haven't got a half pence, God bless you. It's a Christmas song. Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat. Please to put a penny in the old man's hat. If you haven't got a penny, a half penny will do. If you haven't got a half pence, God bless you. You have a dollar, you're in the airport, you're going someplace. You have a dollar, help these women, because you know that they are not being paid and that they need every penny that they have. We can do better. We can do better than this. I love this book because, again, it's about water. And one of the things that I love about water, that we all understand about water, is that everything that comes, every life comes from water. And we were talking earlier, Mars, because I'm a space freak. And it was the poets, you have to remember, who recognized that there's water on Mars, because everybody kept saying there's no water on Mars. Mars is it's just a dry, it's a desert. And then we finally can land a few things up there. And it's like, oh, there's water. And then it's like, well, nothing can grow up there. And then we find out, well, yeah, you can grow a few tomatoes and a little lettuce. Something is up on Mars. And so we do know this about Mars, that there was life on Mars. But Mars, who is the sister planet of Earth, most likely, and it's, again, it's going to be the poets who are going to say that. And I don't mean me, Nikki, I just mean the poets who are going to point out that there was nuclear weapons on Mars. There were nuclear weapons on Mars. And all you have to do is have one go off, because one will set the rest of them off. And if you recall, you are probably a little too young, but when I was about your age, a little younger, Mars was the red planet. And that's because it was burning and it was burning and it was burning. And it has now burned off, and it is now becoming closer to being a sister planet to us. I think it's just fabulous that we are now beginning to see what we can do with a sister planet. I'm a space freak, and I really love the idea of our galaxy. I love the idea of Star Trek space, the final frontier. And of course, what they all end up saying is, you know, where no man has gone before. And what they needed to say was, and woman, because the best people to go into space are women. One, we're lighter, first of all, we are. And two, we get along with people a little better. And I was talking about space one time, and somebody said, well, Nick, you know, you're talking about that, but you go into space, you know, you're going to probably get raped or something, those aliens. I said, I've been raped by those aliens. My ancestors have lived with aliens. You know, are you telling me something that hadn't happened? You know, get over it. I would love to see an alien, because I know this, being a Black woman, whatever it is that something puts in me, I will have it and I will name it and I will love it, because that's what Black women do. So we need to get some Black women into space so that we can find out how to get along with people that we haven't known. I think that that's what's so important. And Black women get along with everybody. If the world were run by Black women, which I hope Joe Biden and Kamala Harris win just for that reason, if the world were run by Black women, we would have a kinder world. We would have better food. We would have some prettier cloth, and it would be a better world, because the men are always fighting to try to show, I'm a man, I can kill you. And that's not manly. That's cowardly. But the women are trying to say, now, honey, come on now, you know, go to church. You have to get dressed, get up and go to church. And I know that, you know, what was Sunday. The reason, and I have to laugh about this. I don't know if that's your problem, but the reason women my age don't swim is that we all got our hair done. It was called our hair done on Saturday. We got our hair straightened on Saturday because church was on Sunday. And the only time through segregation that we could swim was on Saturday, because the swimming pool was closed on the rest of the week to us. So the only time we could swim was on Saturday, but the women couldn't go, the men did. So men my age can swim, but the women never could, because no matter what they say about swimming caps, water gets in under. And then the hair that you have spent and that your parents have spent money getting straightened is now gonna be what is called nappy. And that just can't be. So Black women my age don't swim. And that's the truth. You know, you can see that. We can do a lot of things, but swimming isn't one. So we're all so proud of the younger generation and what you all are doing with how you want to look. You look like you want to look. Your hair is purple or green or whatever you want it to be. You are doing yourself the way that you want to. And I think if you talk to women my age, we're all so very proud that you all are taking control. And I've been looking at magazines. I just go over to Barnes & Noble. I don't buy them because nobody'd be bothered spending my money like that. And you're looking at the magazines. And now they're showing women who are big. They're showing big women. Remember, women used to all weigh 103 pounds, you know? And now they're showing big women. They're showing Black women. The women are beginning to take control of our bodies. And I don't care who they put on the Supreme Court, they're a crazy woman, whatever they do, I still think it doesn't matter. Women will take control of their bodies because we have decided this is important to us. And it's time that we quit letting other people make a decision about how we should look. We have made that. We made that decision. And I think it's so wonderful. Black Lives Matter is so wonderful. That was women, three women, and they were talking to each other. And talking that, well, you know, Black Lives Matter. And somebody said, yeah. And they put that together. And we do Black Lives Matter. Of course, white people got jealous and said, white lives matter too, but we weren't the ones who went. We didn't go out lynching them. We didn't go out burning their houses down. We didn't go out bombing their churches. They need to rear their children so that their children have good sense and leave us alone. That would be another discussion though, wouldn't it? But I just wanted to, that's what I've been writing about. And I've been interested in water, and I've been interested in space. And the combination is going to be something, there's something there that we don't know. I'm 77 years old, so I'm going to miss a lot. The chances of me seeing Earthlings in space, or seeing the first Earthling go through the third ring of Jupiter, the chances of that, of me seeing it, it's very slim. But it's very nice to know that we are beginning to think about what else is in this galaxy and how we respond to it. I think that that's wonderful. And I do know that it will be Black women who lead the way on that one.
Wow, thank you so much. We could go, man, I could listen to this all night. It's like the richness of the poems and then the richness of just the stories. I'm so touched. And then I'm going to start with the questions people have for you, but a couple people commented on your story about your grandparents, you know, and I just kind of relate just the beauty of it. So you have a lot of questions coming in the Q&A. Are you ready for them?
I am.
Okay. So we have a question. Dana Band is asking you, do you have a special place you like to write?
Actually, where I'm sitting right now is my den. I'm usually writing in my den, where, as I say, the dog is behaved. She's behaving today. But this is where I write. And usually my blind is up, but right now my blind is down because we're trying to make it make the light come out a little better. And you can see something. If you look right in the back, you'll see a grandmother and a granddaughter. It was a painting a friend gave me. It was a part of a book called Vacation Time. And but there's some things I'm surrounded. I have a weakness for grandmothers, so I'm surrounded. Yeah. By these paintings. That's one of my very favorite. And I was very glad and very lucky that my grandmother, because I got kicked out of college because I was fooling around, and I was that's the truth. But I was very glad that grandpapa passed before he saw me graduate. I went to Fisk, which was his school. But grandmother was able to be there when I graduated. And I was so glad. I thought, well, I've done one thing right. And, you know, let me see. Is it, remember the old song, We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder? So
yes.
Wrote, every step goes higher and higher. So I got one step and I thought, okay, now let's do another, because you got some people who want to be proud of you, and you got to stop fooling around. It's time to grow up.
Yeah, that's so special. So you had, again, a lot of comments about the grandparents. Someone said they're going to call their grandparents when they get home tonight because they're so inspired. And then we have a question from Jackie. Do you think something happened between your grandparents' generation and your parents' generation that interrupted their capacity to show love the same, or was it just them as people? So do you think something happened between those two generations?
I know that my grandparents' generation fought against segregation. They fought against lynching. I mean, you look at the Ida B. Wells, you know, just look at the great men and women, for that matter, Frederick Douglass, look at the great men and women. So I think that they did a lot of fighting. I don't know what happened with my parents' generation. I think that war is not a good idea. And I think war hurt a lot of men, a lot of probably women, probably Black men and white men also, because white men have been pretty crazy. And as we have seen coming through now to Afghanistan and the Iraqi war, people are doing things that are making them unwell. Mm-hmm. And I don't, there must be another term for that. And I think it's, I think that one of the biggest problems that we've lost. If I could be president, one of the early things that I would do, this is what I'm trying to say, is I would bring the draft back, because everybody needs to serve the country. And I would bring the draft back, and I would draft men and women, black and white, rich and poor, deaf and dumb, blind. I would draft everybody, because everybody has something to give. Now, somebody would say, you know, in my squadron, there's this blind guy, and I have to try to talk to, you know, yes, because some people are blind. There's this deaf guy, and I have to learn how to speak to him in that language. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the draft was important. Ronald Reagan got rid of the draft because richer white people didn't want to fight. They wanted to send poor black and white men to do their fighting, and black and white women to do their fighting. And in doing that, they separated groups, because I'm here in Appalachia, and in Appalachia, we knew each other. We shared with each other. We sang songs, you know, you can listen to the songs. You can just go back to the 60s and you'll hear that we sound like we talk to each other. And now, if you hear, you're not hearing it, you're hearing the separation of this is country and this is not. And I think that's a shame. I would, as I said, if I had my way, if you're asking that question, if I had my way, I would create a draft again. And I would want everybody, male, female, all of them, to come together for a year, maybe 2 years, so that they can learn to get along, so that they can learn to live with each other. I think that would be incredibly important.
Okay. All right. So we got a lot of questions, but someone wanted to express that today in Philly, you know, there's a police involved shooting, and they were really depressed. And they're speaking about, this is Oni LaSana, and she's speaking about listening to Marvin Gaye all day, what's going on, and then listening to you now, you know, and feeling sad about it, but being able to hear you now. So I think when you talked about the Marvin Gaye cover inspiration. So someone else, Barbara, is asking, can you speak about the value of school libraries and librarians? They're down to 5 or 6 schools still having one out of 200 schools in Philadelphia.
And that's going on all across the country, because the most important things that human beings have done, in my opinion, is learn language. And people have been trying to take language away from us. They've been trying to take the word away from us forever, for the longest, as you know. We have murdered people because they spoke. We murdered Jesus because he was speaking the truth. We murdered Socrates. We murdered, you know, we have been murdering people for the longest for trying to speak the truth. But libraries are important because the truth is in there. You could go in the library, and I used to love the library. We had the old library, and you could go into the library, and if you didn't do anything but go through the card catalog, you learned a lot. And my students and I argue about this, because my students say, well, Nick, you know, you can go to what is that thing, Safari, and learn something. I said, you don't, because you don't make mistakes in Safari. You don't accidentally go through something in Safari. If you ask Safari what is, it will answer you.
Right.
But that's all you'll get. Whereas if you wanted to know what it is in a library, you have to go and you stand in front of the card catalog, and you go through it, and you're looking at, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And that is so important. Libraries are important. And the second thing, I said, the first thing I'd do if I were president, which I'm not, is is the draft. But the second thing I'd do is I would definitely raise the pay for teachers and librarians, because there's nobody more important. You go to the library and you sit down. My librarian, and it's one of the few things that I actually remember, was Mrs. Long. You see, there are a lot of people I don't remember. I remember Mrs. Long. And she'd say, well, hi, Nikki, how you doing today? And I'd say, fine, sure, what are you reading today? And so we would talk about that. Well, I was reading Charles Darwin at an early age. What I didn't realize was that Mrs. Long had to leave the Carnegie Library, which did not have Darwin, nor Rachel Carson, because I was interested in Silent Spring. She had to go up to the White Library, the McGee Library, and she had to ask for these books. And I've been old enough to know they probably gave her a hard way. This was probably a joke to them. Well, who wants to read? You know, she probably had to put up with a lot to get those books from me. I didn't know that then. What I knew then is that I was saying, oh, I'm interested right now in reading Silent Spring, for example. I remember when I was reading that. And I was like, okay, I just want to know what's happening. And I didn't know what she had to go through. Librarians have gone through a lot to get the books that we need in order to teach ourselves something. Schools taught us a lot also, but the librarians are just key to everything. And I don't think you're going to get any greater people than the librarians.
I agree. They create a community. I mean, they create community in those buildings. So I mentioned your poem, Nikki Rosa, and there's a question from Marilyn. And she says, she quoted, and I really hope that no white person ever has cause to write about me. And she said, it's so relevant in regard to folks not understanding the Black experience, yet acting, speaking as if they do, especially in these days of arguing against the single story. So she wants to know, do you find that line is still relevant today?
Just look at that crazy woman who's on the Supreme Court. And just because she has 7 children doesn't mean I want to. But what she wants is to use my body. Mm-hmm. And she wants to decide what I should do. But mostly, not me, Nikki, because they've about done all they can do with Black people. Mostly what she wants is to control the brown people who are trying to come into the country to have a better life. That's what we were talking about. Well, raise your hand. That mostly they want to control other people. Yeah, because and I'm going that line is followed by because Black love is Black wealth. And they want to tell me that I was poor and that I have a problem and that I need some. I'm not the one with the problem. I'm not the one in the automobile running other white people down because I don't like the fact that they think I should be free. I'm not in Charlotte, North Carolina, Charlottesville, Virginia, murdering people. I'm not a policeman who, in order to show that he has some authority, I pull out a gun on unarmed men and women and shoot them in the back, knowing that nobody's going to say anything to me about it. Nobody. I'm not the one who went into a church and went to prayer meeting with 7 people and pulled out a gun and murdered them. I'm not the one. I really hope no white person ever has cause to write about me because they need to write about themselves. They need to wonder, why are we doing that? What makes us crazy that we do that? What makes us blow up a church in Birmingham, Alabama? What makes us beat up a 14-year-old boy named Emmett Till and beat him to the point that nobody wanted to look at him? Everybody told his mother, no, you need to close that casket because it's so awful. And Mrs. Bradley, she was Mrs. Bradley then. Mrs. Bradley said, I want the world to see what they did to my son. And she was so right. She was so right. And everybody thought that Divine, Mr. Divine, who murdered George Floyd, he thought nobody will remember George Floyd. He's not important. I'll just murder him because I'm in the mood to murder somebody. And the world resisted that. The world found, the world said, you people are crazy. I was amazed to see, and please, Perth, Australia was marching with Black Lives Matter. That George Floyd's picture is all over. Everybody remembers Mr. Floyd. So no, you don't need to write about me. There's nothing wrong with me. You need to write about you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Wow. So as a follow-up, this is a question from Mujnir. What would you say to marginalized communities who, especially this year, do not believe that their vote means anything? You know, election is next week. And some people have all, like myself, early voted and all of that. But some people feel that the vote means nothing. So what are your thoughts on that?
You do something because it needs to be done. And Donald Trump would like to make you think that it means nothing. But if it meant nothing, why do you care that it's not done? Mm-hmm. It was unimportant. There 200 years ago, we couldn't vote. So that meant nothing. 200 years ago, we were not people. We were only 3/4 of a person, right. If I'm not mistaken, right? So it was not a problem. But now they want to convince you, oh, it's no point in you going. What are you doing that you're so damn busy that you don't have a minute to stand in line? I'm so proud of looking at Los Angeles and looking at Atlanta. I'm so proud looking at Detroit and looking at all over the country where the lines, Black and some white people are with us, mm-hmm. where the lines are just long. Of course you should vote. And if you don't like what you're trying to vote for, write your mama's name in, write your grandmama's name in, write your damn name in, but let them know I have a voice and I will not be made a coward because of you. Because what they do is they want to make us afraid. They want to make us think what we do doesn't matter. And yet the world sings our songs, the world dances our dance, the world dresses like we do. Mm-hmm. I find it's impossible. I look at my kids, my students, and they have purchased blue jeans from Neiman Marcus, because that's who I know best. And the jeans will they're torn. Their knees are torn out and stuff. And I've said to my kids, well, what did you pay? You paid $200 for that. And they were like, well, yeah, that's the style. You paid $200 for that. That's the style. And whose style was it? It's the Black people's style. That came from Jesus Christ Superstar. That's the way it looked, but it's our style. Mm-hmm. So if it didn't matter, nobody would have anything to say to you. No, you've got to vote. I was singing a song today, and you probably don't know it, but it's like, I'm biding my time, because that's the kind of gal I am. When Southerners are fishing and Northerners are wishing, I'm biding my time. And Harris too, vote.
Well, that's a public service announcement. Vote, vote, people, vote. So someone's asking about the poem, the title of the poem. And by the way, the book is called Make Me Rain, and it's out. And I think there was a link posted in the chat box, so you know, getting yourself a copy, everyone. But the poem, was it called In Silence? Someone wanted to know about your grandparents, the one that you read. I think the first line was something about silence. They wanted to know the title of that poem.
Oh, it's called Silence.
Okay, it's called Silence, Michael. It's called Silence. Okay, thank you. Great. So
here it is on page 50. It's called In Silence.
Okay, because you're right, Michael.
Yeah, because Grandpapa didn't smoke, but Grandmother did.
Okay. So
it's always very interesting to me. And I smoked, which was a bad idea. But so he would sit, they would sit together in silence. It was love.
Yes, it was beautiful. I mean, just beautiful. So Ken wants to know, he says, can I bring you back to the inception of the Black Arts Movement? Was it the sister organization to Black Power Movement leaders, or was it fully integrated?
As far as I know, Black Arts birthed Black Power. We were the ones. You always have to go back to the artists. And I'm not saying me, Nikki. I'm just saying if we go back, look back. Let's roll it back to the 1920s when Edward VIII left, resigned being King of England so that he could come to the United States. Now they said, oh, he came because he wanted to marry Wally Simpson. Well, if he's like most other men, and especially powerful men, she could have been his mistress. So it was not that. He wanted to be, which is where he came. He wanted to be in the United States. He wanted to be able to come and sit and listen to jazz. He wanted to be a part of the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And you can't overlook that. You can't overlook what we have done. And the Harlem Renaissance is going to give us a County Cullen. It's going to give us a Paul Laurence Dunbar. It's going to come all the way up. Ultimately, we're going to get to a James Baldwin. But what we have is the artists saying, this is not going to work. We want something different. We want something more. And as they do that, Black Power is going to come out of that. But it was still, the Black Art Movement was a movement that brought people into us, that brought people into the world. And of course, a lot of Black artists, not my generation, but a lot of the Black artists left the United States because of the lynching and the murders and things. James Baldwin and that group, Chester Himes and that group all left the United States. They lived in Paris or they lived in London. Chester Himes lived for a while, I think, in Russia before we fell out with Russia. But if you look at how it happened, the the smoothness of it. We started with the Renaissance. We started with the Paul Laurence Dunbar, who's going to say, I know why the cage bird sings out of me. Yeah. And so the artists are saying it, and the power of movement is going to pick it up.
So thank you. And then Eric wants to know, as a Black man, what do we need? Meaning, what do Black men need to do to support Black women? You keep saving the world. How do we repay you?
Oh, Black men need to support each other. In my opinion, I'm a woman, so I don't know. I have a friend. I'm not speaking to him anymore. We'll never speak again, actually. And he was, no, it's the truth. He was upset because he says, he said, I don't believe in abortion. And I said to him, but you don't get pregnant. You've never been pregnant, so what do you know about it? And we argued back and forth. And I said, you know, you can't make a decision about somebody else's life. And the one thing that I think every Black woman, probably every Black woman has heard at some point, is ain't mine. Ain't mine. you've heard it, and you all have done it. The best father on earth, as we know, is Father Penguin, because when the egg is laid, Mother Penguin has to go back to the ocean, or she's not going to make it. She has to go back so that she can feed and be okay. And so Father Penguin is going to have to take care of the egg. And then you have to love Father Penguin, because as cold as it is, he and his fellow men, his fellow penguins, form a circle, and they go around in the circle. Is that not true? They go around and go around so that they can keep the warmth that they have. Is that not true? So that as they move around, they pass, and then one of them, that person who was on the outside, finally gets to the inside where it's warm, and then he moves back out. And that's how they go through the winter, and how they keep the egg. That's how they keep it warm. And I think that Black men have allowed other men to try to tell them who they are and what they do. But I know, for example, we were talking about my grandparents, but even before that, Black men didn't hit Black women. Black men didn't scream at Black women. Black men didn't put Black women down. And one of the reasons that I love, and probably most Black women do, the blues, is that he would come home, because he's sharecropping. He's working every day, and he would come home, and it's the blues, but it's so wonderful. And he would say, put on your red dress, baby, because we're going out tonight. And that's love. And this is, now we're talking in the teens and the 20s. That's what Black men did. And she felt like, oh, I look okay. He thinks we're going out. He thinks my red dress makes it. When are you saying to your woman, or the woman you're living with, or the woman you're whatever you it, when are you saying that to her? Put on your red dress, baby.
You got your answer, Eric. So a message also, someone wants to thank you. This is a message from Francis. Do you think any of the current artists who are creating Marvin Gaye's, are they creating Marvin Gaye's level of social education and justice music? And do you feel that these artists are out here, some of them are doing this. And in your opinion, who's kind of doing that right now?
Well, I'm older. And so my music that I listen to, you know, I was so sad recently when McCoy Tyner passed. I'm a big John Coltrane fan. You know, I've been teaching my students Thelonious Monk. And the one thing that anybody who's had a class with me will be able to tell you, in their sleep, or actually in their death, the piano ain't got no bad notes. And that's Mr. Thelonious said that. And so I'm trying to teach them that the piano got no bad notes. And so this is what you're trying to do with your writing, or with anything else. I have a great, of course, respect for, and actually, the longer I'm around and listen to it, the more I'm understanding. Beyonce is doing some incredible, just incredible work. And I think, wow, that's really good. I'm very disappointed, of course, in Ice Cube and Kanye West and them, because they've let money control them. And we ought to know better than that. You know, Judas let money control him. Judas, I needed 30 pieces of silver. Well, you know, son of a bitch. You're giving up God because you want 30 pieces of silver. I mean, get over it. And it's that kind of thing. I think that there are some young people coming up. Of course, the person who was murdered, and I have a tattoo, not that it matters, but I had to do something to let his mother know that. I have a tattoo that says Thug Life, because they murdered Tupac, because they knew that Tupac was moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. He was definitely moving people with him. I don't know a lot of the youngsters. I just know that Kanye is crazy. And I know that Ice Cube is greedy. And I know that now when people responded to it, well, I didn't really mean it that way. I had a plan. No, damn it, you don't show a plan to the devil. Mm-hmm. That's what he's doing. I went to Trump because I was going to show him what he needs to do for Black people. Trump needs to drop dead for Black people. Don't hand me that. You went because you thought you could get something. And that's ridiculous. That's shameful that Ice Cube would do that. That's shameful.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So Deborah wants to thank you. She says you're the first poet she's ever saw live on the Mike Douglas show. You made her believe poets are real. And when she wrote poetry, it was real too. So that's from Deborah. And then from Zahira, yeah. And yeah, a lot more questions. So I'm gonna try to get through this. Maybe we can only read about three more or so, or a little longer. If you could give advice to your 10-year-old self, what would you tell her? That's from Zahira.
I would tell her to keep going, because my 10-year-old self obviously was sad. I was listening to my father beat my mother. If you ask me, and I've said that, and it's true. If you ask me, what was I doing on Saturday night at 11 o'clock? I was listening to my father hit my mother. And I knew I had to find a way to go through that. I knew I had to, and that's why I ended up writing. And thank God I had a grandmother. And I knew something was wrong with one of them. I couldn't figure out which one, but I knew it wasn't me. Right. So I knew that I had to get out of there. And I was able to go live with my grandparents. And that was just very, very fortunate for me.
Thank God you had the grandmother. And then someone else is saying, it's kind of like connected. Emily's question is, when did you know you were meant to be a writer? She feels you're prolific and phenomenal, and she thanks you.
Well, tell her thank you. I don't know meant. I just know it's all I can do. And you just heard me try to sing. I'm biding my time. So you know. I can't sing. I can't dance. I don't know how to play the piano. So if I couldn't write, I don't know what I would do. And I love
I like that.
Yeah, I love
words. I love that answer. So you have Marilyn, is more of a comment. She's 73, grew up in Jersey, took swimming lessons at the YWCA. She's been a certified scuba diver ever since the 1980s. She wants Black folks to do some more scuba diving. So Naomi Nelson, when did you realize the impact your grandmother had and continues to have on your life?
Always. And I don't remember her never not. And grandpapa too. And I talk about grandmother just because that's who I actually adored. I always liked grandpapa. I didn't ever like, I don't want you to think I disliked him. So in watching the two of them, it was always interesting to me that he loved her and that nothing in his life was going to stop him from loving her. And I would listen to their stories after, because when I went to live with them, I had to do the dishes. And I say, he would say that, you know, Nikki, I only wanted to kiss your grandma. And it was a joke to him. He was teasing her, but I had to listen. And I was, oh, I wonder what that, it took me the longest to realize that was a metaphor. But we would sit out on the porch. These were the days that people had front porches. And I think one of the big losses right now in homes is that everybody has a back porch. Mm. So you don't get to talk to your neighbors. People would walk by in the evening, and he taught school, so they would call him professor. And they'd say, evening, Professor Watson. And they would stop and say what they had to say. Now everybody has a back porch, so you don't get to talk to your neighbors. You don't get to say hello. But I got to listen to their stories. And I got to see his face when he talked about grandmother. Now, she always adored him. That was very clear. But he just lit up. There was just something when he said Luvinia that you knew whatever love means, this is it. And that's something that you say, I want to give and I want to be a part of.
Yes. So I'm going to just skip through and try to get two more to you. It's such a blessing. And I know people, you have people hanging on to your every word. So Sharita wants to know, first of all, she says, thank you. And your stories feel like a warm hug to her. Who are some of the newer writers and artists we should pay attention to? This is from Sharita.
Well, of course, and we've lost just a great writer, Toni Morrison, just... Yeah, and gosh, you really hate losing her. Toni was a good friend. There's a young lady whom I adore. I think she's wonderful. I told her, I said, you're a cousin, whether you admit it or not. And her name is Renee Watson. And because she's a Watson, she's a YA, young adult. And I really like what Renee is doing. Of course, Kwame Alexander, especially his novels, are just really so wonderful. And I enjoy them. If you like brilliance, I think it's fair to say, Edwidge Danneket.
Yes.
It's probably one of the most brilliant young women writers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really is just brilliant, as is Isabel Wilkerson.
Mm-hmm. Cast.
Her book, The Warmth of Other Suns.
Of Other Suns. Yes. Yes.
Cast has its not its problems, because she looked at caste one way and we looked at caste. You know, you read a book and you get some other things, but The Warmth of Other Suns is quite brilliant. And if I had a book to recommend, I'd say read The Warmth of Other Suns, because it's just quite brilliant. And once you start to read, I like poetry. So once you start to get into the poets, that's always nice too.
It's always nice. That someone's asking who your favorite poet is. That's such a hard question though. I mean.
Oh my, Gwen Brush, you got Margaret Walker. That is a hard question, because you're like, you can go all the way back to a County Cullen, or, you know, I live in Cincinnati. And so we have our neighbor right up there in Dayton was Paul Laurence Dunbar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're looking at him. Of course, Robert Hayden was my mother's favorite poet. And one of the poems that he wrote that is incredibly beautiful is Those Winter Sundays. It's just such a beautiful.
You can look at it. Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
We read it at mommy's funeral, because it was just something she loved. And I was lucky to have gone to Fisk, because Bob Hayden, Dr. Hayden, taught at Fisk. So, you know, you could see him. I took a class from him, and you could see him. He wore, his glasses were thick like that. And you could see him walking across campus, and he was practically shuffling because he couldn't half see. But he was quite a brilliant, quite a wonderful writer. So there's just, it's a lot.
Yes, and there are tons of comments about thank you for honoring Toni Morrison, thank you for your legacy, you appreciate it, all these loving comments. I'm going to end, because I know the night is long, with a question from Christine, and I recall you know, so she wants to know, since you talked about food, well, what are you cooking these days? And she says she loves your food writing.
I do write about food a lot, because food is not just that we eat it, but there's something communal about food. Mm-hmm. I actually am a good cook, and I used to have a ongoing fight with my good friend Maya Angelou, who thought she was a good cook, and we would fight back and forth about who could cook what best. And I only live two hours from Maya, because I'm here in Virginia Tech. She's down at Wake Forest. And one day Oprah, I don't know if Oprah remembers this, but Oprah was down, and a couple of friends, Oprah and Galen, were down. And so Maya called me and she said, well, you're always saying you can cook, you know, come on down and let's see if you can cook something. What do you want to cook? I said, well, because I do cook an incredible rack of lamb, just beautiful. So I had a couple of rack of lamb. So I said, oh, I'm going to take it down there and cook it. And Maya, you know, had to sit in she was in a wheelchair at this point. I don't know if you may not know it, but her kitchen was a professional kitchen. She always had and it was beautiful, but it was gas. So she could not enter her kitchen because of her oxygen. So she's going to sit out. And I'm cooking my rack of lamb. I'm grilling it, because she's got this grill. I mean, her kitchen was wonderful. And we set the table. We set the table. And she's always sat at the edge of her table because she's the head of her table. That's, she grew up in Mississippi, and that's the way she looked, you know. And I'm at the other end now because I'm the chef. And I'm looking at her because I know I cook a hell of a fine rack of lamb.
Yeah.
And she cut it and she bit into it. And she looked at me and she says, well, it could use a little salt. Said, girl, you should quit it. You know damn well that's the best rack of lamb you've ever had. Because she should have said, want to admit, well, yeah, yours is a little better than mine. I had more fun. She
that's
and
a
I
great story.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. Well, you have gifted us with such a wonderful evening. And the book is called Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose by Nikki Giovanni. So we want to just thank everyone for joining us. And you have, I mean, over 200 people out here listening and hearing your words and hearing your poems. And Sister Nikki Giovanni, I just want to thank you. Thank you for being there for me as a young person with just living in your words. And thank you now for your presence, your beauty, and your gift of poetry. We really appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. And you Philadelphians, take care of yourself. Don't let those people discourage you. Vote.
We will.
Vote. Go ahead. You have a voice. Use it. Words are important.
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll end on that. Everyone have a lovely evening. Thank you so much for your questions and thank you for tuning in. Thank you to the Free Library of Philadelphia for offering this platform and wonderful opportunity for us to hear and meet legends, legendary artists. Thank you and good night.
Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.